The next topic, Dryden as a neoclassicist. Introduction. Both in theory and practice, Dryden was essentially a neoclassicist, and his criticism as well as his creative work, he appears as a supporter of the theory and the practice of the Greek and Latin writer of antiquity, even though he always disclaimed an slavish adherence to those rules which were enunciated long ago. In his classicism, he was more or less a representative of the age. Along with Milton, he stand at the end of the Renaissance. Milton and Dryden, according to George Sanborn, represent two developments at the end of the Renaissance. Milton preserved the elevation and the growing richness of the humanist intellect, while Dryden developed in the realistic, critical and skeptical tradition initiated in part by Montaigne. Milton is in his restoration of poems thought and worked in terms of the higher genre, epic and tragedy, and he thus achieved the aim of English neoclassical distinction. Dryden followed in inferior genre, and the lesser poet in general followed Dryden in this respect. Dryden and his times. The classicism of Dryden and Milton was representative of the post-Restoration period. The Restoration marked the close of the genuine Romanticism of the Elizabethan period and also the decadent Romanticism of the Jacobean and Caroline period. The creative imagination, exuberant fancy and exuberance of the past had no appeal for an age which saw the establishment of the Royal Society, and with that the glorious initiation of an era of experimental science. A critical spirit was aboard, and men stopped taking everything for granted. This critical spirit was analytic and inquisitive, not synthetic, and naively credulous. It put a greater prime on intellect and reason than on imagination. Dryden was a great exponent of this spirit, as a critic puts it. The merit of the new school are found in its intellectual force and actuality, just as its demerits lie in its lack of deep imagination and tendency to deal with minor and superficialities rather than with elemental things and larger issues of life. Dryden's neoclassicism signifies mainly the following two characteristics. First, his appreciation and recommendation of the theory and practice of the ancient Greek and Roman writers, in bracket, and also their old Italian and contemporary French imitators. Second, his critical realistic appraisal of his own times, though the handling of topical and realistic theme having a direct and immediate bearing upon his society and times. Basically, Dryden's neoclassicism, like the classical temper of his times, was a reaction against the decadent romanticism of the preceding age. The metaphysical tradition often in the hand of his followers was, in the words of a critic, guiding poetry towards a wilderness of nonsensical thought and a grotesque form. Somehow, says the same critic, unconsciously yet nonetheless firmly, there arose toward the middle of the 17th century a desire for a change or reversion to something more orderly and more definite. The glorious days of Elizabeth had gone forever. Now there were and tendencies for repressing the formless poetry and formless prose and extravagant philosophy. This repression led to the pseudo-classicism of the late 17th and the early 18th century. It found no greater champion than John Dryden. It stand to reason whether this classicism was true or pseudo. Though Dryden was a great champion of this classicism Yet it must be admitted that before him, Waller and Denham had done some pioneer work. Imitation of the Ancients. Dryden's neoclassicism manifests itself primarily in his reverence of the ancient and his repeated protestation in favor of their theory and practice. It was perhaps on account of their lack of native genius that Dryden and his contemporaries looked toward the ancient Greek and Roman writer for inspiration as well as guidance. His habit, says a critic, quite noticeable during the time of Dryden, depended and hardened during the succeeding era of Pope, so much so that the latter laid down as a fine test of excellence. Learn hence for ancient rule a just esteem to copy nature it is to copy them. Dryden and his contemporaries looked upon the ancient as their model by the ancient by generally and practically meant the ancient writer. Seneca provided the model for tragedy, Terence and Plautus for comedy, Virgil for epic and pastoral, Horace and Juvenal for satire, Pindar or for odes, and Horace with Ars Poetica for literary criticism. Of all the ancient Roman writers, Dryden respected Virgil of the most and repeatedly acknowledged him as his master and guide. It was the lifelong ambition of his to write an epic in the manner of Virgil, innate, and to imitate the brilliance, straight lines, and sonority of his masterpiece. It must be remembered that the neoclassical critic in France, as also in England, had given epic the most exalted place among the poetic kind. The hence Dryden's ambition is understandable, but the Louis I. Bradwold puts it in inverted comma. This ambition he sacrificed for the various opportunities of the moment because of the pressing necessity of earning a living for his family. Apart from the fact that Dryden imitated the ancient and drew inspiration from them, it is notable that he translated quite a few of them into English verse. Among those whose works he translated in part may be mentioned Virgil and Boccaccio. Influence of the neoclassicists. Dryden neoclassicism was partly important step in France. To quote an opinion, the reaction against the poetic license of the Renaissance had set in somewhat earlier, establishing order and discipline in literature. Cornell and Racine had developed a drama on the life of Latin tragedy, and Moliere evolved under the influence of classical example a type of social comedy which ranged from hearty farce and elegant comedy of manner. According to W.H. Hudson, in noted comma, the contemporary literature of the French was characterized by lucidity, vivacity, and by reason of the close attention given to form, correctness, elegance and finesse. It was moreover a literature in which intellect was in the ascendant and the critical faculty always in control. It was to this literature that Dryden looked for inspiration. His heroic play, which seems to be romantic in their exuberance and extravagance, were based on French model in Dryden's comedies. To the influence of the French master like Molière and quite apparent, though this influence is for the worse, realism. Much of romantic literature is marked by a lack of realism, amounting sometimes to sheer escapism. Classicism, on the other hand, put a special emphasis on concrete reality and aims preeminently at the edification and empowerment of the reader. But a true classical writer does not indulge in ephemeral journalism. Even if he may deal with topical issues, he treats them in such a way that this work does not lose interest outside the context of his age and this environment. Dryden, like his contemporaries, says a critic, did not allow his thoughts in wander off with Spencer to fairyland or to explore with Milton and mysteries of heaven and hell. He made his verse a vehicle of argument, controversy, personal and political satire. And one closed. Dryden's poetry is not the poetry of basic human passion, but the practical motive which govern human action. He was a man right in the thick of the faction-torn political life of his age. He had a strong like and dislike, though these like and dislike were seldom constant. Most of his poetical work is intimately linked with the event and ethos of his age or his own life, his friends and his enemies. His Religio Lacy, 1683, for instance, was written in defense of the Church of England when he himself was one of its ardent members. On becoming a Roman Catholic, he came out with a Hind and the Panther, 1687, defending his new religion. His Annus Mirabilis, the Year of Wonder, describes the wonderful event in the Great Fire and the defeat of the Dutch fleet of the year 1666. His three great satire, Absalom and Achitophel, the Medal, and Mac Flecknoe, are concerned with the political activity of his age and are designed to chastise his personal and political enemies. From all this, it should be clear that he was very surrealistic in the choice of theme for his poetry. These themes may have been prosaic enough, but his poetry cannot be called prosaic. Matthew Arnold went so far as to assert that Dryden and Pope are the classics not of our poetry but of prose. As T.S. Eliot and Mark Van Doren have pointed out, Dryden's treatment is poetic. It is in fact the superabundance of Dryden's poetic faculty that raises even prosaic theme to the level of high poetry. Verse the Society. Dryden's poetry was verse the Society. The poet, says Louis I. Bradwald, in Inverted Comma, was in this age close to his public, was indeed presumably a part of it, a gentleman who wrote for ladies and gentlemen. He found his audience in his select circle, and his work are praised not by reviews in literary journal but by the judgment voice in the coffee house or driving room. The poet was a man of the world, and he wrote House of Drawing Room. The poet was a man of the world, and he wrote about politics, war, religion, scientific progress, whatever might interest the society in which he lived. He wrote verse for social or festive occasion as a matter of course, poetry being one of the delightful amusement of life. This poetry has the merit and the defect of the society for which it was written. In it comma closed. Whereas the romantic poet writes mainly as an individual for himself primarily, the classical poet like Dryden writes as a cultured man speaking to other cultured men. His aim is not self-revelation, but arguing and convincing with the help of logic, or that specious logic which is called satire. Dryden was the greatest arguer in verse, but what is the primary significance is not his argumentation but his poetry, to whatever purpose it may have been bent by him. intellect versus imagination. Classical poetry is characterized, broadly speaking, by the predominance of the intellectual faculty, control, good sense, reason, order, symmetry, and clarity over heady imagination. Lawlessness, disorder, extravagance, eccentricity, and disrespect of authority. Dryden himself compared imagination to a headstrong horse and reason to the bit which regulate its speed and but for which the beast would go out of control and do much mischief. George Sherburne maintained in this connection in a noted comma, basically the school of Dryden is devoted to a belief in control as essential to art to a disbelief in premeditated art. Once imagination was controlled by the procedure of the ancient and by thinking in term of genre, it must be understood that this insistence of on control, reason, or intellect is not necessarily an evidence of imaginative sterility. It is rather tantamount to a preference of order over choice, of sobriety over extravagance. There are very few poets who have the vitality and exuberance of Dryden, even when some have much more of intensity or profundity. It is wrong to say that Dryden's poetry is completely intellectual and has nothing to do with imagination or emotion, as Kazamian maintains. Dryden, in inverted comma, written in his blood the glow of an ardor that is vanishing from his generation. The mature art he creates for himself is not of the strip and somewhat spare type to which a perfected technique will tend, but rather of a still, sturdy, robust, and strong-lived quality. The psychological source that nurture it are exclusively intellectual. Thus, we may say that Dryden is not a strict classicist. His art, says Kazamian in inverted comma, is a mixed art, neither the pure classicism which Pope will endeavor to practice nor the pseudo-classicism, P-S-E-U-D-O classicism, tainted with descendant romanticism which Dryden had practiced in his early poem, but a strong blending in which the essential element of discipline and of an accepted rule combined with the sovereign ease and bloodiness and of inspiration. His odes are good instance of the combination of discipline and inspiration. As a critic, thus Dryden was a never had bound classicist. His approach is always marked by flexibility and tentativeness. That is evident in his critical works also. He gives due respect to the ancient but was not chary to praising the modern, even those moderns who did not care for the rule of the ancient. His glowing tribute to Chaucer and Shakespeare is well known. He seems to believe in a kind of theory of continuous evolution toward perfection. He makes bold attempt to criticize the tartness of Roman comic plots, their poor wit and instructiveness, though he praised their dexterous handling of individual situation and the regularity of their structure. He is also critical of those classical French dramatists who put all the stress on regularity, which according to him lead to thinness. He asked disarmingly, Now what I beseech you is more easy than to write a regular French play, or more difficult than to write an irregular English one like those of Fletcher or of Shakespeare. Further, Further, he condemned the French preoccupation which rules at the cost of the spirit of writing. He maintained that in most of the irregular play of Shakespeare or Fletcher, there is more masculine fancy and greater spirit in the writing than there is in any of the French. Dryden was then indeed influenced by the French neoclassical critic such Le Bossieux, Rapin, and later Boileau, but their influence on him is not so strong as on critic like Rameau, who tenaciously and enigmatically adhered to all the rules. Unlike Rameau, Dryden himself was a creative writer, brimful of native poetic energy, which he refused to curb by the mechanical application of these rules. Thus, in him was a synthesis of classical and romantic qualities. Kazamian ever, in inverted comma, full of the doctrine of the ancient, he bent it to a free and fruitful adaptation in his instinct outturn and explain away the last scruple of the thinker. Inverted comma closed. Expiration. In his expression, again, Dryden appears as a classicist, criticizing the virtuous and the clarity, simplicity, neatness, and order. He has been rightly called the father of modern English prose. As William J. Long maintained before Dryden, in inverted comma, the general tendency of writers was toward extravagance of thought and language. Sentences were often involved and loaded with Latin quotation and classical allusions. Dryden brought prose from the turbulence and confusion of antiquity to the perspicuity and order of modernity, even though his prose has a charming masculine vigor and raciness, yet basically it is functional in nature. In the field of verse also, Dryden emphasized the need for clarity, order, and balance. He popularized the use of the heroic couplet as a vehicle for almost all kind of poetry and even tragedy for its neatness, clarity, and balance. The heroic couplet appealed to him. After him, the couplet became the recognized measure for all classical poetry of the school of Pope and even later. Dryden's achievement is to have made the heroic couplet a self-contained unit by discouraging the tendency toward enjambment, and he married his sense perfectly to his meter. However, he reserved for himself considerable liberty in the employment of his measure. His frequent use of Alexandrines and triplets, of which Pope was highly critical, may be mentioned in this connection. The topic, Dryden as a neoclassicist, over.